the Ninja Rob Podcast with Marco Perazzo and Tim Carpenter. The podcast for the true martial artist.
Most well-run podcasts would do like a year in review.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, but I don't want to get lumped into that pile.
Yo, that would take like a lot of research to figure shit out, right? Or no?
What, our year in review?
Yeah, you got it.
We would just need to remember what we talked about.
Shit, son.
About 30 episodes was how COVID sucked.
That's a good one.
Right?
That's a good
one. One episode would be how you never train football players.
Never.
Right?
Timmy has.
The other episode would be Timmy claiming to train football players. And
I love Timmy when he produces, he forgets you. I love like when Sean Connery dies, son. We totally left that out of the, you know.
Right. Yeah, and you were late.
R.I.P. Sean Connery.
Yeah. Yo, for real. How could you disrespect the God, son?
When hold on, let me interject.
Oh,
when
here we go.
When one of the rappers of this time period died, Marco seemed to have let in with some little side.
You mean currently
the one? No, but see now you're interjecting when you're not supposed to.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure that if Juice WRLD was partly disrespected.
Right. No,
Juice WRLD. I forgot. R.I.P. Juice WRLD.
Well, and I saw some sort of goofy thing at the mall with Juice WRLD and all his dates,
really?
But it is a sad day.
It is. It is, most certainly.
And it's sad because MF Doom passed away.
Yes.
Right? And you say, when you write his name, you write it in all capitals.
That's all the time.
If you, Tim, and I know Tim's not going to be saying much during this episode.
You know, I might have to run out for a little while. Just text me when you guys are done.
Apparently the MF Doom stands for Metal Face, but
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he passed away October 31st on Halloween.
What about?
Yeah, very very odd. So some of you may know who MF Doom is if you ever listened to the Gas
Face. He died on October 31st.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about it now?
Because they just announced it the other day.
They actually released it the 31st of December.
Yeah, I think to end the year with it. But if you listen to Third Base, MF Doom is referred to as Zev Love X.
Zev Love X.
In the Gas Face song. Yes, and he comes and starts.
Because he was a member of KMD.
KMD, yes.
Yeah, Peach Fuzz.
I never knew this.
Yeah, see,
Peach Fuzz.
This is black history being taught by outsiders.
Hey, man. Peach Fuzz. You never heard of Peach Fuzz? Bro, it's not like you're 22 years old. Stop
right,
it.
But so if you remember the Gas Face song, then you'd heard, you would have heard MF Doom.
Yeah, I know Gas Face. Though.
Right. Then his brother passes away, and he takes a hiatus from the industry of, you know, music, and then comes back with The Mask, and then just starts making what some people believe is some of the greatest rap or hip hop music to come out, because just the way he approaches the music, right? His rhyme style. And Dev, I mean, you rap professionally, mm-hmm. so you can understand what I'm talking about. But for me, and this will tie into the martial arts at some point, was I was into rap music was the first genre of music that I ever liked, right? I listened to a bunch of different stuff, but if you were in my bedroom and the music was on and I got to pick it, it was rap music, right? But all I ever knew was rap music that I heard on the radio or rap music that I saw on MTV. Right. So I didn't know, and I wasn't that deep into music to know, how do I find more than this? I just thought that this was all the music that existed. Right. And then I get into, you know, making different friends and going to high school and whatever. And I still don't get exposed to a lot of, you know, new music. And then getting into jiu-jitsu. And I'm pretty sure Ralphie Darden, Major Taylor, who does the intro music for us, talking to him. And he's like, yeah, what music do you like? And this and that. He's like, yeah, you got to check out MF Doom. And I go, what the fuck? What is this? He says, check it out. I think you're going to like it. And I heard it. And it was that first time that you're like, well, I was like, well, I like rap music. I like hip hop. And this sounds like it's rap music and it's hip hop, but it just doesn't seem to fit into the mold of what it is that they're feeding me and saying, hey, this, what you're hearing on the radio, what you see on MTV is rap and hip hop. And then it sent me down this kind of corridor of, wow, how do I experience these things that I'm not getting fed? Right? How do I find artists, or how do I find things that isn't just given to me by the powers that be? Right? And that's, you know, and it sucks. And we're all going to die at some point, even you, Tim.
I don't think so.
I know, right?
Being part of Tim.
Just not of coronavirus. That's all.
But it was just super interesting because I don't get affected when celebrities die. It's like, all right, you know, like whatever. He was nobody to me. And I was not particularly sad that he died, but I have a fond memory of I can align my kind of love of this genre of music, this culture, and say this was the artist that took me deeper into what this music is and what it can be, and also how it can be all-encompassing, not just for Black people, not just for white people, not just for Puerto Ricans.
Jump in.
Go ahead. Just
so people understand that the reason why, when I sent that to you, well, Marco was the first person that I thought of as soon as I saw it say MF Doom, because he's brought up only a handful of artists to me, and MF Doom was one of them. Yeah. You know what I mean? And MF Doom isn't a rapper that you find a whole bunch. There's a ton of people spread across the world, but you just don't run into that, especially out here in Philly. Mostly it's a different kind of music that people listen to.
Yeah, and you know, JB and I talk about Doom all the time. Yeah. And, you know, I think Mos Def is amazing, right? And when you hear Mos Def talking about MF Doom as if the best quote that I heard Mos Def talk about MF Doom, he says, he raps as weird as I feel.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's amazing for someone who, at the height of his career was very, very, very popular, right? To connect with an artist and just be like, man, this guy is singing my voice for me, then I can't even formulate these words. And I think jiu-jitsu and martial arts and the oddities of kind of like what we've all chosen as things that we're passionate about fall in line with MF Doom, right? Because like you said, not a lot of people know who MF Doom is, right? Not a lot of people know jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai.
Especially in the beginning, man.
Especially in the beginning.
I mean, MMA, it's like weird. Like you looked at it, you're like, what the fuck is it? Like the one thing you catch from like, you laying down and fighting?
What's that all about?
What's that about? And at that point, it's in the same realm. You're like, you got to explain it. No, it's not from Japan. No, it's not this. It's not that. And then, bang, it gives all the respect it deserves. You know what I mean?
That's Wu-Tang Clan.
To a degree, which is a whole nother.
So MF Doom is more like Killer Priest. Is kind of like, for me, the same weird
Priest,
weirdness.
Liquid Swords, that was his album, right? Liquid Swords? Or no, Killer? No, that wasn't Killer Priest. That was... Okay.
Wait, who's Killer Priest?
He's a member of the Wu-Tang, but he's a lesser known. That's why I said that those comparisons. Wu-Tang is the only almost like commercially successful version of that
kind of
genre of underground rapping. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Because when you bring up the Wu-Tang, first time I heard that album, I was like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. The 36 Chambers, like who makes music like this? And how did this become so
popular? You had with MF Doom.
With MF Doom,
comic
right.
book. I mean, it's Dr. Doom,
right?
Is what he is Dr. what Doom, he's yeah. what he is. You know what I'm saying?
Victor Von Doom.
What I and the martial arts fans of this show can appreciate about a guy like MF Doom is that, you know, when his brother passed away and he came back to music, he decided that it was going to be about the voice and not about the appearance, and that's part of the reason why he wore the mask. So like jiu-jitsu is about the effectiveness, not the beauty, right? Even though jiu-jitsu is like a beautiful thing. But apparently, if you would go to an MF Doom concert, you're not sure if that was actually him behind the mask.
Right, that's dope.
Yeah, like it could. Kiss. What's that?
It's like Kiss.
Go on.
No, Kiss has hired people to perform as Kiss, but like the guys.
Well, you got to have some bad seats then, because I still know those motherfuckers' faces with the paint on it. This dude has a whole steel mask on, and it's super Dr. Doom, because like he said Von Doom.
Yeah,
this Victor dude's Doom. Last name is why his name is Doom too. It's like Dumal.
Dumale.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He might say it, and he'll say. I've heard him say Dumale.
Yeah, so it's like that's. Just
I didn't realize he was British,
born in London, I believe.
Yeah. Wait, if you went to an MF Doom concert.
It might not be
it wasn't him. Wouldn't you be so a little bit
mad at you?
Because you basically just listened to an album at.
Well, and that's what he so.
He wanted to rip his
and fans so, off. And a lot of people would say that he wasn't about the money, and that's bullshit because I doubt he wasn't.
He was eccentric.
He wasn't doing it. He's not doing a concert for free.
Right.
Right. He's getting paid to do what he does. But what he was pushing was the idea is you're not here to look at me. You're here to hear me.
Right.
So it doesn't matter who's up there.
Yeah.
Right? It's the artistry of it. And I've quoted this before where they were talking about Don Rickles, another guy that affected me when he passed away, was he didn't care what it, he would never compromise his artistic integrity to make somebody laugh, but the most important thing to him was making people laugh, right? And I think MF Doom is kind of the same way with that, right, where he figured out, this is who I'm going to be. I'm not going to compromise. I'll make money. I'll carve out my niche. I'll be, you know, some people are comparing him to Thelonious Monk, you know, like those kinds of people. It's crazy.
Sometimes we don't get access. It doesn't, you know, being ahead of your time is a real thing. And you know, he might be, he's one of those people. You know what I mean? He was doing things that other guys weren't doing. So props to him, man. Rest in power, my brother.
Yeah, 49 years old.
49, you know, 40, son? Yeah. Yo, every time that happens, I count. I'm like, damn, all I got is 4 more years to go. Shit, yeah, he right. died. Like, how am I going to make it?
That's a year away. But so this leads into kind of the martial arts talk where, all right, on the, you know, when you get into jiu-jitsu, you're like, okay, wearing this gi and I'm doing my thing.
I miss it, man.
When... And it could be any martial arts, right? Your martial arts passion or history.
Yeah.
But when did you realize that you had become passionate about it, right? What was one thing that you could go back and say, man, like when I realized that I'm this passionate about hip hop music, when that introduction to MF Doom and then following that, right? For me, like my passion for jiu-jitsu started off in one direction and then kind of kept going deeper and deeper, because the same thing with jiu-jitsu, we were not going to say sold a bill of goods, but we were told this very direct story of, this is what jiu-jitsu is, this is who it comes from, this is how you approach it, and this is how you fight it, right? And then I learned that that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
there's cool. These other people that are doing it a certain way and doing certain techniques that aren't exactly what, you know, your father is saying is the right way.
I love how in the beginning with jiu-jitsu it was just like, yeah, nobody, you can't. If I get you, the Mata Leone, like, that's it, it's over. Yeah. It's a wrap. There's no way to, you know how many times I've done that? And it's like, this motherfucker just won't be choked.
Right.
Like,
well, you know. At the time, it was like that.
Right. You know, because no one had seen it.
Somebody that doesn't know what's going on, it is like that.
Yeah, nah.
But now that everybody knows a little bit.
It was fascinating. And I remember instructors like, you can't do anything. I was like, yeah, you can't do anything. You know what I mean? So, but the thing about that was, just the way jiu-jitsu came in, just the way it kind of rolled in and where you'd have to find it. You couldn't, you know what I mean? I remember taking classes in a basement at one time, you know what I mean? So.
But what was it for you, Tim? Like, what was your martial arts moment where you...
I was obsessed with it before I even tried it.
Yeah.
Like, I stayed home from school one day and I saw a commercial for the UFC on it was like the old pay-per-view channel.
Right.
Just like they would have commercials for whatever was coming up.
Right.
And I saw a commercial for a UFC and I think I ended up, because they would replay the same commercials, I ended up recording the commercial just so I could like slow it down and rewatch it again to see what was going on. And then eventually I rented a tape at the video store because they had one.
Yo, how crazy is it to listen to him say that?
Look at that.
When's the last time you rented a tape of anything? But go ahead.
But then... this is like early. This is
what tape was it? Do you remember?
It was UFC.
Debbie Does Dallas.
The first one I saw, it was either UFC 2 or 4 was the first one I saw.
Right.
But it was hard to find the first one.
Was 2 the one that was hard to find after?
No,
the first one was
very hard. You didn't see UFC 1?
No.
No, I didn't see it live, no.
No, bro. A lot of people I know didn't see any of it.
4 might have been the first one I saw.
I had to have ordered UFC 1.
Really?
Had to, bro.
I had no idea it existed.
Because it was fucking something like that.
I just saw the commercial. Like,
you sure?
I had to have, bro.
Because I remember when it...
I saw it on tape.
By the time I... The only thing I could rent, I rented one of the ones... What was the one where Maurice Smith kicks Conan Sylvia in the side of the head? Extreme I rented fighting. That.
Hold on. Was UFC 1 won by a cop?
No, that was 3.
That was...
Steve Jenham.
Steve Jenham. Yeah, that was 3.
So see,
it wasn't one.
No. Who won 1? No, because I watched...
Hoyce Gracie.
Hoyce Gracie won 1, 2, and 4.
1, 2, and 4, yeah.
Yo, I think I ordered that shit.
Really?
Man. Yeah, and the only reason I saw UFC number 1 was because my dear friend's father recorded it.
Wow.
Top loading VCR.
Amen.
So
I had...
they had money.
Like, there was no internet back then. Internet.
Right.
My mom had access to
it. It was only for the army.
Yes. Right, so I was asking her, I was like, I want to do jiu-jitsu. Like, where can we find this? And so she was like, well, I can look it up online. So she, like, found...
45 minutes later.
Well, the closest one was Maxercise.
Right.
And that was the only one.
That was it, man. Exactly. That's the epicenter.
The other one,
area.
There was like one in New York, and then there was throughout the country, there was like another two or three.
King, too, at that
time. Dudes would drive an hour and a half to train jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, and no, then, when people say, it's too far, it's 15 minutes away, it's too far. I'm like, what?
But she was also able to find it was basically written instructions on the Gracie basics. So it was like a description of the mount escape, but no pictures.
Wow.
So it was just description of mount escape.
She printed it out for you?
Yeah, she printed it out for me. And I had it in like a folder and I carried it around with me everywhere. And like in school, I would just like sit there and like read it.
Yo, was it in like just normal sheets of paper?
Just normal sheets of paper, okay. Like stapled together.
Nah, because I don't know if you remember, but you remember the paper with the holes on the side? You had to tear it apart?
Oh, yeah.
No, it was just normal
sheets
of paper.
Did you have a trapper keeper?
Not at that
you look point. Like a trapper.
Not at that point.
You did. Yeah, with a candy bar in it.
But no, so I just used to sit and read that like over and over again. And I didn't know what they were describing, but I was trying to like envision it in my head. Like, where is my arms
That's
in relation to this?
That's fucking fascinating. Especially when you've never seen it.
Yeah. What was fascinating to me in those early UFCs and that it wouldn't fly today was how they would show you the different martial arts.
Oh, I love that shit, bro.
That was the best part.
Salai, remember that?
And then... You know, you're watching.
I think that's in two, right?
That was possibly. In two. They did it the best.
And Ken Shamrock doing the Americana with his legs. Yeah. And, Hoist doing something with Helsin. And I was like, this is amazing. Like,
the explanation was awesome.
It almost
ninjutsu.
Felt like it was an entrance into a secret society.
Yeah. It felt close to like Bloodsport. Remember Bloodsport? The Kumite, even though all that stuff's not true, it breaks my heart.
Frank Dukes?
Don't bring it up.
Yeah, it was UFC 2.
Yeah, that's what you saw.
It wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't one. I
don't think hardly anybody saw the first one live.
One had the was he Hawaiian?
And I think
what was that one guy?
He was Hawaiian. He was a Hawaiian sumo guy.
Yeah, bro, he got his tooth knocked out. Right?
Yes,
number three was the big black sumo dude.
Yeah, Manuel Garbo.
And then he got hit by 666.
Keith Hackney.
Kempo karate.
Keith Hackney.
Yes.
Yo, broke his hand. Like, I thought I was watching, like you said, Street Fighter or something. I begged my mom to watch it. It cost $25.
Damn,
remember when
I begged her. She was like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, please, mom. Like, I gotta watch it. They're real fighting. Like, they're fighting to the death. That's because that's close
to it.
Yeah, I thought it was. Yeah, I thought they fought to the death.
Yeah, man. I had the little packet of paper, and then I would just go to the bookstore and look for black belt magazines because every once in a while, like a martial arts magazine would have an article.
Oddly, JB would look for Black Tails
with some pictures.
Marco knows exactly what it is, though.
Of course, that's what I love. Jiu-jitsu moves. And even back then, like there would be like the Gracies, but I would also see articles about the Machados. There was this other guy, Walt Bayless, who was doing like American jiu-jitsu back then, or combat jiu-jitsu or something like that. So even back then, you could see other versions of jiu-jitsu in these magazines.
Di Pasquale.
Now that's
that came later.
The guy that wrote books, right?
Is I think so, but he also had some like jiu-jitsu acumen to him.
And
so,
then I found a judo school.
Right.
I started training there because I learned that judo is basically the same as jiu-jitsu as far as like.
When did you unlearn that?
Well, I mean, techniques are the same.
It was told to me the same thing.
I knew that when I went in. I was like, this is judo. So I bought books on judo and I was reading those. So I saw like, they have arm locks, they have chokes and this. So I was like, I'm going to do this.
The same friend whose father ordered the UFC was doing judo and he'd always wanted me to go to judo with him. And I'm like, if I'm ever going to do anything, I'm going to box like my brother, you know? And I never boxed. And we watched it and he goes, we do all these same moves in judo. Right. And I was like, sign me up. Let's go. Wow. You know?
And I was lucky because the judo school I went to, a lot of judo schools, like the groundwork is like an afterthought.
Yes.
Right? But this one, they had like,
Liberty Bell?
Yeah. It was like 3 days a week. I think we had 3 days a week to train. And one of the days was purely groundwork.
Well, you had the pleasure of training with Joe Candelo, who in the state of Pennsylvania, even within a few states, was
like nationally, he was known
one of the top guys in this area for sure.
Awesome.
I got to train there. And then there was some guys from Maxercise, like you came down at one point,
right?
But Mark Campanets,
yes,
and Mike Ancona, like those guys trained at Maxercise. So once I had heard of Maxercise from the printout my mom had given me, and I heard those guys talking about Max, I was like, holy shit. I was like, this is my way in. Like these guys, these guys train there and then they also train here. I was like, someday I'm going to be able to get there, you know?
And look at you now.
Yeah, now.
Yeah.
But once I was obsessed with it before I even tried it. And then once I tried it, like I haven't done a single, like nothing else has really interested me that much. As far as like, I want to get into that. Like it's just like, this is all, once I did it, I didn't see any way I could stop doing it.
Well, what's interesting for me is that we were very much taught a certain style of jiu-jitsu, right? Where it was, I was always pounded, this is the only way to do it. This is it right here. This is the only way to do it. Right. And I'm like, I guess, you know, if you get, you know, I watched you guys on TV and your guy's winning and you're a student of this guy and you're teaching me. So I guess this is the way to do it. And I was all about it. And then just starting to just be who I am as in my regular personality. I'm like, man, this doesn't feel right. This kid, this is awesome, but there has to be a little bit more to it. And then getting exposed and seeing that there's tournaments that they never told you about, right? Like, or techniques that like, no, that would never work. And even there would be times like, you would catch that guy. I was pointed out.
You would beat Holetta.
No. you would catch that guy in a triangle. And I'm watching the guy and I'm like, I don't know. This guy just won the world championships. What are you talking about? Nah, you catch him in a triangle. No fucking way. Yeah. I catch this guy in a triangle. So they were caught up in a very, almost, what's the one?
Like a one track mind type of
brainwashed. They were brainwashed. Okay.
Yeah,
right?
I think it all kind of comes into that direction in the beginning, so to speak. It's just so that you don't naturally, because we have that inclination to constantly like, well, what about this? So,
what's new? What about that? Because I got a quick question for y'all. If jiu-jitsu would have blew up right, like super fast, do you think you would have been as interested in it if it became a thing that everybody did?
Bro, but there were times that we were in class, like 70 dudes in class with us. Man. So it blew up.
It blew up among like a bunch of people that were kind of weird. You know what I mean?
So, but that's what I'm saying is.
But I didn't give a
one
fuck.
One, violent people, nerds.
Yeah.
It's like somehow this all go together.
But I didn't care. Like I just wanted to do it. I didn't care if there was a million people or one person. Right. And I think I was lucky because I never got that feeling that you're talking about, because it's probably because I started at a judo school where there's tons of cross training,
right?
And it's a competitive sport. So it's just like, oh, that guy's really good. That guy's really good. We want to get good. It's just like, you don't like real competitors. They don't look at other people like their enemies. They're just like, all right, what do I got to do to beat that guy? Right. What's he doing that I could do better? That's how I started. So when I got to Maxxercise, I had seen tons of tournament footage and like, I was, you remember Sav? You know Sav.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I would.
Your friend.
Yeah. I found him on a message board and I was buying like, I would send him like $20 and he would send me like a VHS tape with like 20 tournaments on it. Like, so I was like buying competition videos and Vale Tudo fights from Brazil. So I was seeing all these other non-Gracie jiu-jitsu guys and different styles of like grappling from all over fighting. So I never felt like, the Gracies, I still thought the Gracies were the best, but I was like, you could learn something from.
Right.
I was like, because there were Sambo guys I was training with at judo. There was like all kinds of like different things I was exposed to. So I never felt like when I heard somebody say like, oh, this is, you don't need to go there. I was like, I don't give a fuck what you say. I'm still going to go look at other stuff.
How did you handle when you heard, maybe if you've heard an instructor talk like Marco was talking about, like, this is it. This is the right way. Or were you just like, okay, yeah. I just want to learn this. Right, this cool, is but it. I don't care.
Like, I don't really ever accept what somebody tells me like, this is it. I'm like, okay, but I still want to know for myself. Gotcha. Like, I'm not just going to take your word for it.
So a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the difference between Japanese jiu-jitsu and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I think you were here for that.
Maybe.
I think the interesting part is the way that we were introduced in the jiu-jitsu was see how effective it is, right? Like see how effective it is. But then certain aspects of the same culture were like, but believe what we're telling you. Don't test it. Don't test those waters outside of here.
Right.
Don't try those other schools. And the beauty of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Gracie Jiu-Jitsu is the fact that I show you that it works, and then you prove to yourself that it does work, right?
Or you can watch this video of me doing it on the beach,
right? A lot of times in what we would say Japanese Jiu-Jitsu is like, well, we've been told it works,
right? You know? It's much more formal,
right?
To a degree,
I think that's probably why I like Jiu-Jitsu, Judo, grappling so much is because it's like it's immediately proven.
Yes.
Or disprove it.
Right.
But going back to what you were saying, it's like when I got to that headspace at where we were training, that I was like, I'd started making friends at other jiu-jitsu schools, or I'd heard about other jiu-jitsu schools, and I'd go, I guess this is kind of like going to a comic book store. Or like, I go to this comic book store, but I hear there's Fat Jack's comics in Center City. Let me go over there and see what they're like over there. And they were cool, and these guys are cool. So I thought the jiu-jitsu community was the same way, and it wasn't.
No.
Right?
No,
So the school I was training at, a couple of the dudes were like, well, you shouldn't do that. And, you know, that's not cool. And how are you going to show your loyalty? And I was like, no, I'm just going to, I'll be back. I'm just going for
right.
Tomorrow night. I won't be here for class, but on Thursday, I'll be back for my regular class. I just want to see what's out there. And then when you go to that school, they're looking at you and it's like, wow, am I a blood? And did I just walk into a set of Crips?
It sounds like religion. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like fucking cults, because when I was a kid and I wanted to like learn about the Bible, I didn't want to listen to one person. So I went to the Jehovah's Witness church that was called the Kingdom Hall. And I used to go to like
Westfield?
Right on Westfield. I was going to them, but each one was like fighting with me. Like, don't go over there. And then they were way more the same than they thought they were. Like, they would be like, believe this. And it's like, no, they don't. They're just lying on each other.
Yeah, but there's a finite amount of money that you have to spread around to all these.
Right. That's the case. Yeah. Same thing with the jiu-jitsu is like a business. So
going to these schools, like the instructors were all, now if you're visiting from out of town, it's different.
Yeah.
But if you were at that time, if I was visiting a school that was within the same business
area.
What
was the alternative to Maxercise at the time?
Man, not really much. Henzo had opened in the Borst building, which was only a few blocks from Maxercise was.
I guess I never made it there in time. I think I went and it was gone by the time I went.
Yeah, so it was only there for a short period of time. Yeah. I'm not sure what happened. Yeah. And then one of the instructors there moved to Jersey and then had his school in Jersey.
That was West's face. Ricky started, right?
I'm not sure.
Right? No? Okay.
But anyway, so I went there and visited and made some friends there. And it was always, like at that time, it was the head instructors that had more issues with people visiting. The dudes would fuck you up, but they were super cool about it if they were better than you. And if they weren't, right, then they got fucked up. This is the beauty of when you go into somewhere. Either somebody's going to win or somebody's going to lose. And, at the end of the day, we're going to wind up being a little bit cooler because we just train with each other, so. But that was for me part of kind of realizing that martial arts was more than what they were telling me, was stepping out of where I was training and who I was training with and who I can learn from.
Yeah. When I started, I was lucky enough to my first karate instructor. He was like, go ahead, go. Because he was one of those like prove it type of dudes, like go ahead and do it. So, I wrestled, and wrestling led me into jiu-jitsu. But you couldn't avoid it at a certain point, because in the beginning it was like, these dudes are laying down to fight. What is that? That's not fighting. This is crazy. And then there was something about it. I was like, yeah, but I want to learn. I believe that in order to beat it, you got to learn. You got to know how it works. Yeah. So in order to be, you have to go inside. And anything, if it's an idea, if you have a religious idea, I want to understand it better, so that if I'm, I take the other side, I know how to operate in that space. So for me, it was more like, I was a karate movie guy or kung fu movies on weekends. And then I became a really big ninja guy. I think I told the ninja story here, the camp thing. So that's what started me. I went to, I go to Asian World and get them, because the catalog was free.
Right.
And then I would just circle everything I wanted. And then I would just make out a list. And I was just like, $1,200. Oh my God, how am I going to get that? I'm going to have to take off the grappling hook. That was a fat Puerto Rican nigga. So I could
grappling hook?
Yeah, son. Yeah, I wanted
to. What building was you going to scale in the hood, bro?
Listen, I don't know, son, but I needed that grappling hook. And guess what?
There might be something to fat kids wanting grappling hooks, because I was obsessed with grappling hooks.
Yo, come on.
That
was better than that. Yeah.
I was like, I need a grappling hook.
Neither one of y'all are afraid of heights at all.
I'm terrified of heights.
What the fuck are you going to do with a grappling hook?
They were looking. I don't want one now.
No. I figured they were looking to break into the kitchen on the second floor.
That's what it was, son. Nah, man, I had it. And then my man, shout out to my man Ninja Rob, he was the only one that actually used my grappling hook. He scaled it. I was sitting there watching him. I was like, this motherfucker's going to fall, and I'm going to save his ass in the war. It was another Cooper River story.
Thinking about it.
I loved all that shit and never wanted to grapple.
Nah, man, I had all that shit.
My mom's boyfriend was a martial arts trainer, and my mom didn't want me like fucking with it or whatever. And he didn't have a school at the time.
So, but he had all the shit. So he gave me nunchucks.
Nice.
And I remember them being like so heavy. And I felt like they were like as tall as my arm. Probably they should have been. So I used to sit on the steps and mess with them. And then he gave me ninja stars, but I wasn't allowed to touch them. So all I could do was go in the closet and stare at them every day. Like literally, I would go in there and just look at them in the box in this case. And I never was able to take them up.
That's how I was
with, and when they broke up, he took them.
When I saw like pictures of like, I had like books on judo, jiu-jitsu, and where I would just look at the pictures and be like, all right. And I would, same thing, just stare at it.
Yeah. Listen, man, we would go to, my mom, we'd get on the bus, we'd go to Arch Street, and my mom might buy us something. It was one of those things, man. I had a fucking ninja suit, everything. I had the whole thing.
Asian World used to be downtown.
Asian World was on Arch Street, son. I would go in there all the time.
One of my students now, shout out to Eric Henningsen, who is my the very first friend I made at the first real job I had at Independence Blue Cross. We were in a training group together, our first day of orientation, and I walk in with a big duffel bag, and he goes, yo, what's in the bag? And I look around like I'm carrying the nuclear football. I go, do Gracie Jiu-Jitsu.
Bong.
It's my gi.
Bong.
I'm gonna go train after this.
Man, that's right. Listen, man. That was right down the street.
Were you a white belt at the time?
Probably. Yeah. It took me like 4 years to get my blue belt. So.
Yeesh. But I got caught up in the ninja stuff and then eventually led into karate. And then I don't think you could avoid, if you're a true martial artist, like this podcast says about you guys, you gotta understand it. You gotta see what this is. It was fascinating. It was mysterious. It was like, what the fuck is going on?
I had a blow dart.
How this guy?
I had that, bro.
You could get that at the flea market. Yeah.
I had that.
Did he take it back too when he left? Or?
Yeah.
For real?
I knew this karate instructor. That was part of their thing. Like you had to do a demonstration, and part of it was with a blowgun. I was like, this shit is crazy.
My nunchucks had studs on them too.
Yeah.
What? Metal, like yeah. It was metal studs.
The chain is to stop the sword when they try to kill. Which is a lie.
Because some of the studs was missing on it.
Man, but I love all aspects of it, man. It was just one of those things.
I bet if you held those nunchucks now, they would be like plastic. It's like completely
It's like when I walked back into my original grade school, I was like,
yes.
Man, it felt like it was so 20 feet. The ceilings were 20 feet tall.
That's the thing about it. That's how it is at McGraw. You walk into the lunchroom and you're like, dog, it's like the studio. It's terrible.
McGraw.
Yeah, McGraw, yo.
Man, that's one of those things. So.
Yeah, right? So for you, it was basically the handwritten notes that your mother printed out.
That's awesome.
For me, it was like you were saying, like getting into it at first, but then taking it a step further, because a lot of the times they were telling us like, you know, karate sucks.
Yeah.
And Muay Thai sucks and boxing, you know, because that's where the whole, those boxer guys or those judo guys or those karate guys.
Or the Aikido guys. Or remember the Aikido guys next door?
Right. Seven Spirit Mountain Fist of Kung Fu guys.
Yeah, the Kung Fu guys.
Up the street too.
That guy.
Right.
And the guy with the long hair?
Possibly, right?
He'd do nothing at tournaments.
But we would, for me, the first jiu-jitsu guy that I was like, what the fuck is he doing? And I've talked about him in the past. Like, same thing like with that MF Doom moment. Was Leo Vera, Leo Zinho, right? Watching him do what he was doing compared to what we were doing, I was like, what the fuck? This is not, it looks the same, but how the fuck has he made this ugly, grimy sport look athletic and acrobatic, right?
I mean, the only thing I ever took from him was that like flip over back take. When I saw that, I was like, I gotta learn how to do that. But like you said, we saw that video of him training with Yuki Nakai.
Yes, that rolling omoplata from the single leg.
That was, that move we've talked about before, it really just a way of pulling guard.
Yes.
You end up just like you're basically just conceding a takedown.
Then it was like, but this it looks amazing.
Like when you teach it and nobody's seen it before, they're like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah. Anything rolling gets oohs and ahs.
Yeah.
Anything rolling or flying.
Yeah, so sucks that MF Doom died.
Definitely.
But
And Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, a few people. It sucks that Logan Paul's going to die too.
Killed by Floyd. Floyd's going to kill him. I almost watched a video of Mike Tyson telling him that Floyd's going to beat the shit out of him.
I watched it.
Yeah?
He said that, he said, how do you think it's going to go down? Mike's eating magic mushrooms.
That was the worst. It was making me ill while I was driving.
How dare you?
What, to hear? Because hearing him chew?
Hearing him chew while he's talking, while he's eating.
I've never done magic mushrooms. So, Tim, is it hard, you know, when you do illegal drugs, how does one chew a mushroom?
I've only done them in a therapeutic setting. So I.
You had a shaman and all that?
No, it is no. I had a shaman. I had a spiritual guy.
Okay. But yeah, Mike Tyson. Melting. Yo, it was amazing. Did you see the video that I'm talking about? No. So Mike basically says that Floyd Mayweather's only vice is that he's a gym rat.
Really?
He goes. It's that gym. He's pointing, and I don't know where he's pointing.
And he kind of does it like this too. Like Mike goes like,
"Oh yeah, that's his. That's yeah, like, yeah. Mike Tyson's one of the most disturbing interviewers of all time.
Is it?
He's different.
It's painful. Yeah. It's painful. No, sometimes. But
he intimidates every single person. Yeah. Killers, rappers that kill people. Mm-hmm. Mike Tyson asked him questions like he just did Boosie.
Yeah.
Bro, did you watch that interview?
No, he's but like, I know there was beef between him and his daughter. Beef,
but, because Boosie spoke out on Dwayne Wade's
kid.
And, Mike Tyson will just look him straight in the eyes, a dude that people are afraid of, and just be like, who are you to fucking tell him what to do? And then said, is it possible that you're gay? Maybe you're gay. Is that, are you gay?
Well, it's a little bit.
And it's like, whoa.
No, Boosie would never take that from anybody.
Boosie would never take that. He looked so intimidated and kind of like,
it's Mike Tyson, Mike.
Like he wants Mike to explain Tyson, it. Son. So Mike does that to every person that comes on the show, bro.
He's the great equalizer.
Yes. Yes, man.
They're like, I'm not fucking around. You never know. Because Mike always says things like this. Like, if you're a killer, right? And I know, like, okay, you killed a couple dudes. Just some regular hood shit. Right? No, I'm not. Like, you're not all the way serial murder. You might have shot two dudes in your life in your motherfucking 40. Right? So... But Mike says shit to you like, you don't have the same demons that I have. If you knew what I've done, you would never even speak to me. If everyone here knew the darkness that's inside of me and what I've done, you'd be like, what the fuck did he do?
Nah,
like,
I think he's being a bit dramatic.
Yeah,
he's knocked a lot of people out.
Yo, man, but when
he was younger, he was a criminal.
Mike Tyson. I think Mike Tyson definitely murdered people.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But that interview, Tyson gives whichever Paul brother it is, he goes, well, you're a man. He says, so you have a chance.
Yeah.
He does.
They didn't say you have a chance. He said, Logan Paul was like, he's like, so I'm just like a punching bag. He's like, no, you're a man. You're stepping up to the challenge, but you're going to get fucked up.
Right.
That's what he said. He never said he had a chance.
He's like, no, misquote from Marco.
He was like,
yo, doesn't he outweigh Floyd?
Yeah. Like 60 pounds, 50, 60 pounds.
Really?
And six inches.
Yeah, but he doesn't outskill him by any stretch of the
imagination. No, he can't. And that's because what's-his-face didn't take the fight, right? Connor?
I don't know what
the other. I think Jake Paul.
That's the other brother.
Confusing them. Okay.
That's the other brother.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You're getting your white guys confused.
Yeah, man, listen, these white internet dudes, yo, there's so many of them. Dan Bilzerian. Whatever.
Oh, he's going broke too.
Hey, man.
Other people's money, OPM.
Yeah, they said it wasn't. He couldn't go broke. It wasn't his money.
That dude lives a life that's unbelievable.
Nah, they already checked it. It's all flim flam.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what it is. He still lives an unbelievable life.
No, he lives.
No matter where. Yeah.
Listen, it's over.
He was really doing all those things.
Yeah. Just throwing bitches off roofs.
Yeah.
He got sued for it.
Naked chicks, all this in his. Oh, man.
He was in movies and shit like that.
All right. So I got a question. You said you have some questions as well. How many did you get in?
Check.
I'm glad you're prepared.
Maybe like
at least he didn't forget him yet.
Yeah. All right, I'll start reading this one.
Let's go.
So, had an incident a while back, live training with someone known to be an aggressive role. During the course of the round, I was in receipt of a couple of bows and knees. Flailing was typical. However, at one point, I caught a headbutt, which felt somewhat intentional. At this point, I turned it up a bit. Normally with him, I'd catch, then release. But I started to finish, but never cranked, torqued, or held any subs. He is one of those guys who chases taps. So he's getting progressively more angry. This leads him into careless positions, which result in more taps, culminating with a scream tap. At the end of the round, he storms off and slumps in a corner. At this point, one of the head instructors approaches me and tells me, as the higher belt, I was in the wrong. That I should have better controlled the role or walked away. I was shocked. My response was that in my experience, mat lessons are the most indelible, and how else is he to learn? Not only etiquette, but not to do stupid things. To reiterate, this guy, with a reputation for context, he is a multiple stripe blue belt, but has a wrestling background, and while his 145 pounds is stretched over a 5'9 frame, I would consider us to be the same size. Was I wrong in how I handled the role? Was I a quote-unquote Matt bully, as was suggested? Would either one of us, pardon me, would either one of you had a problem with how I handled it? And then there's a postscript. As a corollary, how do you define a true Matt bully? How do you deal with Matt bullies? Do you believe in Matt enforcers? Have you ever felt compelled to personally deal with a Matt bully? In other words, acted as a Matt enforcer. I feel like at NJMA, self-policing was kind of encouraged and seemed like an organic way to deal with any problems. And this question is from Anonymous.
Hmm. Gave everything but that dude's social security.
Yeah, right?
I think
that's a lot of stuff, man.
So what's the question?
So he made a guy scream.
Was he okay? Did he move?
Did he fucking the dude up?
No. So I doubt that somebody is intentionally headbutting you. Hmm. Like that's a bit. If a guy is doing that, if a guy intentionally headbutted me, I'm like, hold on a second, man. Like, what the fuck are you doing? But it's probably the guy's just a rough spaz, and he should get fucked up. You like, if you're the higher belt, like I'm usually the highest belt where I'm training, except for, you know, there are some people that have equal amount of stripes. but it doesn't matter whether the guy's a white belt or a brown belt, or a black belt with two stripes instead of three stripes.
What's the other guy? What's the person who's writing?
Brown belt.
Okay, go ahead.
If he's going at a level that's that violent, then he should be treated that way.
Neutralize him.
No, I just say you go at the level that they're going. That's what, like, and in general, like, I would say you don't want me to go at that. Like, if you're going to be rough and using your head and elbows, you don't want me to take it to that level because I'm going to get in a better position and you're going to.
And they're going to be even more effective.
And then when I get an arm, I'm going to treat it like a guy that headbutted me, not like a guy that
I've been training with.
Passed my guard, right. You know? So, no, there's nothing wrong with that. That's how it should be. Like, but if you're doing that just because, like, you know what I mean? If you're doing that without the guy headbutting you and elbowing you,
then you're a mad bully.
Right. Yeah. So I say you just go to the, you adjust your intensity to the level of their intensity. You know, that's what I say.
JB?
I mean, if he's looking for it, then you might have to give it to him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Apparently.
You know what I'm saying? I'm big on saying something. Like, I'm going to say something like, yo, just relax, let's chill. And then I also, when I would roll, I'd go into the role and kind of get a feel for them. And then if I was going to change intensity, I'd say, hey, listen, this next round is going to be a little different. All right? I'm going to step it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they were like, all right, cool. So it was that kind of thing.
In my experience, the people that go at that level, in general, they can take it. They've given it out like that, then
yeah. But you I've give seen it back guys, to them. We've then, seen guys huff off the mat, come on, my G.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just not that kind of, again, wrestling, like, you didn't do that kind of shit when you were at karate, when I was at wrestling, if I was doing any athletics in high school or nothing like that.
I think
it's
different with jiu-jitsu because you're making people say uncle. Yeah. You know? Like, it's hard for some people to say, like, all right, you got me. Like, you're better than me right now.
Right, you're the alpha. Yeah. I'm conceding you that you're the alpha. Yeah.
But so I never saw nobody the whole time I was there. I never saw anybody, like, huff off the mat. I got, like, reprimanded one time about something, and even that dude was, like, super cool and, like, instructive with me, like, afterwards.
I've seen black belts get pissed off and storm off the mat. It's just, like, sometimes people get emotional when they're training. That's understandable, but...
Run into the changing room.
being a, like, a rough person to the point where you're, like, you know, hitting people, like, elbowing and headbutting people, that's, like, that's when you have to, like, put somebody
I just
place.
Mean like strong arm pushing people and shit like that. Like, if I don't know how to do nothing else, I'm just like, well, I'm stronger than him. I'm just gonna push him over.
Yeah.
So I agree with what everybody's saying here. I think the one thing that I will say is that he seems to know a lot about this guy. So that should have been no surprise going into this role that headbutts and elbows were going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. So then you're making the decision, do I want to train with this person because I know that they're rougher than the average bear and that they go this way. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't regulate, but you can't act surprised when you get headbutted or when you get elbowed, because if you already know that this person is a spaz, you're going into it with that. And then sometimes you know, you make that decision. It's like, oh, I don't want to train with this guy today because
right, he's because this fast. It's much. Right? It's too
as
much.
Marco, from being the rough guy, from not knowing what to do, I noticed that when I did go gentler, whatever you want to call it, like more controlled, dudes would roll with me more when I saw that they were like avoiding rolling with me.
Right.
Because it's like, I don't feel like fucking competing right now. I just feel like training. Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, there's a difference. There's definitely like, a difference.
So I noticed, I didn't understand that part though.
It's like, definitely
these dudes been doing this fucking forever. They're not trying to count up wins today.
Nah, it's not
I'm still
about
trying
that.
To collect bodies. Right, right, you know what I'm saying? Right, I want right, to go right. home there's, and feel good.
It feels like you defended yourself. Like, oh, I didn't. You get, when in the beginning, you're like, oh, I didn't tap out. Oh, I have a good defense. Oh, I this. And right. I think as you progress, and of course, I haven't gone as far as these guys have, but as you progress, your ideas change and then more of your personality comes out. It's just like, I want to work on one thing. Like, I've seen you, and I was just, I'm not going to give you too much credit, but I've seen you
yeah,
when you were like super dedicated player. To the backpack thing, son, mm-hmm. and the way you would just over and over, everyone mm-hmm. you rolled with, you just wanted to make sure you got the back take. You want to make yeah. sure, and that level, that's the fascinating thing about some of the things you can do when it comes to jiu-jitsu, but yo, man, like, stop fucking around. You
I think
like,
it comes with respecting the belt, too, because, like, at first when you go in there, you're like, I don't want to believe that because a guy has a black belt on or a brown belt on that he could just fuck me up.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, you start accepting that super majority of the time, that is really right. the truth, and now you're not trying yeah. to prove something to yourself by knocking yeah. it. You're just like, let me just go with this person and learn, try to soak up as much
that,
as I can.
That, you know what I'm saying? You have the paradigm shift and say, yo, this person has something to teach me, then that's what I'm
right,
going to do.
Right,
because
you're not, you change that headspace you're in. Yeah, like, you I'm not, he didn't make me his bitch. He helped me get better.
Yeah, that's all.
Right? Like, he's helping me improve. So, yeah, you were going to say, Tim?
Couple things I've had is like, one thing that drives me crazy and makes me get like, where I like want to be violent is when people grab my fingers. Like, if somebody grabs my finger, if that happens while I'm rolling, I kind of stop. I don't like punch them or anything, but then I just start grabbing their fingers and twisting them like over, like I'll, right. I'll take their back and I'll just grab their hand and start twisting their fingers just so they understand like, this is, if you want to play that game, then I'm going to play the game too.
I can attest that Angry Tim is not a lot of fun to train with. It could get a bit scary, but go ahead.
But then the other thing is like, if I'm doing no gi and a guy grabs my like rash guard or shorts, then I'll grab his rash guard and I'll choke him with it or I'll just rip it. Like, just so he knows, like, this isn't, you know, and I usually will tell them after, hey man, don't grab my fingers.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And then, you know, sometimes I forget to tell people.
That's if it's one thing, if it's a white belt, anything past white, if you've been training for a while, right. you know not to grab people's fingers and twist them.
Right. Cause I've seen, you know, some people will just, they go into this headspace where you see the eyes roll in the back of their head and they'll just grab a finger cause they don't want to get choked.
Yeah.
And I got to make an announcement to everybody. Hey guys.
Yeah.
Single,
yeah.
We don't.
I didn't know. When the hand is on you, and it's yeah. like, well, how am I peeling? Last time I tried to peel somebody's hand off, I couldn't get the whole hand off. I guess I better start going.
So do that. Do that in a tournament.
That's right. Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's against the rules, still do it.
But right. Because we want to make sure that our friends' hands are yeah. continue to, yeah. to
now,
operate.
I think it was Bill that told me, like, oh, you can't peel fingers. I was like, what? I thought everybody was just doing
that's
that
the thing.
Shit.
On a, yeah. like a white belt. Somebody that's new to it, totally understandable, and I'll be like, hey man, just you shouldn't grab people's fingers, it's like not cool.
But and it's dangerous.
I've had it
yeah.
happen with like purple belts and brown belts that have done it while I'm training
and,
with them.
And look,
grab
you know, have
that seems like you're a dick.
Yeah,
but
at
it can
happen.
Like
a dick.
I don't know in the last 5 years how many single fingers I've grabbed, but if I've grabbed it, it's because I was trying to grab the whole hand and I could only get right. the finger. Yeah. So that was after I was like, oh dude, sorry about the grabbing the finger. And you know, people are usually cool about it if you're not, because there's some people are just finger grabbers, right? Where mm-hmm. like, oh well, it's self-defense, and all right dude, fucking relax.
Relax.
Yeah, 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 you know, like yeah. my finger never gonna beat your hand. That's just not a mm-hmm. fight that I can win. But going back to it, I don't think people need to be mat bullies. Sometimes I've gotten myself caught up in not bullying, but walking into a training session with a certain expectation, and it's usually with people that are lower belts, and I feel like I should be, you know, I'm caught up in my own headspace. Oh, I should be doing better with this person.
Right.
And then what I don't allow them to do is stop at the break, and then it goes from a 5 minute round into a 45 minute round.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. And that's when, and then people like, I was like, yeah, I got caught up in my own headspace. I was
for 45 minutes.
For 45 minutes, trying to prove to myself that I was right in the beginning that I should fuck this dude up. And most of the time I'm so caught up in my own head that it doesn't work out the way I want it to work out. So, you know, the other part of being a mad bully is your own expectation.
Do you think that by us agreeing with what he did, we're condoning mad bullying? Because I'm not, I don't think what we're talking about
is mad enforcement.
So I think you need to regulate. It's
anti-bullying.
I don't know.
Bullying the bully.
No, it's just anti-mad bullying.
No, because I'm not into bullying either way.
Sometimes when your kid bites you, you have to like bite their hand a little bit, like a big bite, so that they get an understanding of, I don't like that at all. You can say no. I can't fucking bite people.
Yeah.
You feel what I'm saying?
No, I understand. I'm just saying that's the one thing. The one thing I want to say is I believe in the fact that the energy coming at you is what you give back.
Yeah.
I also believe in giving, you know, a warning. It's a warning. I'm being nice, but it's a warning. Like, yo, let's relax. Mm-hmm. Chill. Let's do this.
And we also have to remember that jiu-jitsu is the gentle art, right?
Yes.
So if applied correctly, you can, if you're that good, you can teach that lesson in maybe the most nonviolent way, but also the most suffocating way.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely. I mean, I've done that.
I can tell you warning people can sound like bitching sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But when you're a higher rank talking to a lower rank, I don't think it's necessarily the same thing.
No.
You know what I mean?
When they leave, they're just like, boy was bitching because I was doing whatever I was doing to him, and then he bitching. But when you do it back to him,
right,
they know like, oh, he could have done that at any time. Yeah, well, like, it's a difference.
Warning them is just, you know, like, hey, if I've talked about the situation before.
Where I had a guy that was kind of being entirely too rough with one of the girls, and I did it exactly the same way back to him, and he then complained to me, which then escalated into kind of a little bit of a back and forth with he and I, where I was like, nah, man, I was like, you can't do that to her and then bitch about it when I do it to you.
Who's that? Yeah. I don't think warning is bitching. I think especially. It's like, yo, you know, chill. Like, if you do this, understand this is what's going to happen.
Like when they say we're doing that spinning shit now.
That kind of shit. Right. Like, yo, oh, that's what we doing? All right. Oh, we doing leg locks? I wanted to ask a quick question in the context of this. Are there any other moves besides grabbing fingers or anything else that you kind of, when someone does it, you're like, really?
This is what we're doing? The butthole check, John. Y'all be doing that shit, man.
I never checked your butthole.
Nah, man.
Relax.
I think maybe
after dinner.
You had a sensitive butthole for a while.
It's like a soft breeze. What they call it, oil checks.
Who does
shit like that, man? A bunch of them over.
Nah, that happened to me in high school. I've never been in wrestling. That shit happens. That shit comes from wrestling.
Me head, man.
Go ahead. Frowned upon.
So you don't like
you head, man.
So you're not happy. You didn't like it. You didn't, you don't.
Only when it happens here. When he gets his oil checked here, he's fine.
It's different. No. Whatever your girl does, it's none of your business.
No, I don't want none of it.
That's actually a good point. So, like, if you could actually cut a lot of this off if you just had a sign that said, these are not permitted or these are frowned upon things, don't slam, don't grab fingers.
I've seen a guy that he'll.
Don't oil check. Don't,
he'll just Devin. Put his hand and just put it over your mouth.
Yo, that's exactly what I was going
with.
Yo, the first time somebody did, my man did that. I was like, yo, man, the fuck out of here, bro. Come on.
I thought it was legal because it was happening to me.
I find in certain ranks, you know what I mean? Like when you learn something new, you start doing it to everybody just to get that little next step up, just to get another body. But when you're going with someone to hire, I was just like, I remember the first time my man did that and he trained at a certain place. Right. So I was just like, come on, man. Freddie. Freddie. I don't know if you're out there, bro.
You can't put the hand over the because I would get this, right? Straight smother joint and have me freak out, right? But then this person would also put their belly on my face, but it's nothing they can do. They have a belly.
Nah,
and that morphs to my whole
side. I can't wait till he hears this.
It morphs to my whole face.
My first wrestling match in high school, right? It was at Triton High School. This dude, I don't think he was stronger than me or more athletic than me, right? But I had no idea what I'm doing. He put me in a headlock, and I went to inhale, and he was much fatter than I. And I inhaled his fat into my nose.
Impossible.
I was like, whoa. No,
bro, I thought I was dying. And then
I
might have
gave that kid a record because he fucking boom. Marco said something like,
I inhaled his
fat. If you tap, like tapping out to that, it's like being pussy.
Yes.
But bro, I had to, because it freaks you out. I can't breathe, bro.
You can. It freaks you out.
That should be not permitted in training.
Fucking pulled on his fat arm.
It's a gay ass move.
And that was
no offense to whoever we're talking about.
Yeah. Putting the belly on the face. Yo, so my G.
You said you had a couple questions to come in?
We got our girl.
Oh, she slay.
Our girl got it.
She slay 215.
She slay. Get a man. Stop it. Stop. Stop harassing us. Stop the harassing. I was out there the other day.
Yeah.
She slay. Yeah, for a thing. You not be out there.
I know.
But we won't start with she slay. We'll get to her at the end.
She got to get it together. How's her?
This is from Jordan Kelly.
How's her HPV going?
From Instagram.
Go ahead.
What's the best style of jiu-jitsu for MMA? Which is better? Which is better, striking or grappling for self-def?
So wait, what's the best?
What's the best style of jiu-jitsu for MMA? First one.
Fuck. I don't know how to answer that question. What's the best style of jiu-jitsu for MMA?
So I don't know if he's talking about like what school is the best.
Right.
For, yeah. Right.
Or,
there's a lot
or if he's talking about like, so let's look at it this way. Let's pretend he means like jiu-jitsu where your goal is to take down, pass the guard and submit the person, or jiu-jitsu where your goal is to pull double guard pull.
Eminari.
Barambolo, Eminari, like that kind of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. So I would go. So then using the clarification there, more of a Carlson Gracie style, Brazilian top team, take down, pass, submit.
As opposed to like an art of jiu-jitsu style.
Yeah, for sure. You know, even though like Ryan Hall is making that style work very well for himself, I think he's kind of more the outlier with that.
Yeah, I agree. Basic jiu-jitsu is like super high level basic jiu-jitsu is
Damian Maya, take down, pass, submit. Yeah.
Right. When does the striking come into that element, or is that something that's kind of like the jiu-jitsu is the main course, the striking is kind of like the appetizer, or kind of like the side stuff?
You're talking about to build an MMA fighter?
In the context of this, like what does he,
MMA?
Yeah.
It should be in there as soon as you decide to fight MMA.
Because remember when we had those classes, they are different. Jiu-jitsu with MMA and jiu-jitsu, they are very different.
But that's basically like sort of old school jiu-jitsu was all about fighting.
Right. And Henzo, I think, has the greatest quote ever. He says your jiu-jitsu shouldn't be very different from your sport to fighting. And regardless of what the fight is, either on the street or in the cage, he said, it's only your thirst for blood that changes.
Yeah.
Right. So.
All right.
And then grappling or striking better for self-defense? Grappling.
Grappling or striking better for self-defense? I would say grappling. Yeah. Jiu-jitsu, yeah.
I'd say striking.
Well, if you can't, this is what I would say. If you can't beat one person, you can't beat more than one person. Most of the times, if you have to fight one person, you're going to end up grappling, and the grappler will win.
So, okay.
I think good hands as a base is always a really good thing.
So, you know what I mean? Having about self-defense, defending yourself from the law as well. You'd be much better off if you take somebody down and hold them down than you will if you punch someone, they fall, hit their head, and die.
Yeah. So I don't disagree with
you. For self-defense,
I just think
if you're thinking long-term life.
Well, because I think that having good hands, it's not just one thing, right? Even with jiu-jitsu, like, it means your footwork's better, your ability to move out of the way, stuff like that.
Right, but if you're so, the problem is that most jiu-jitsu schools aren't training self-defense in a way that is highly effective. But if we were to train, or you were to train your self-defense in the way that makes jiu-jitsu unbelievably effective, then your distance management, your clinch game, your punch avoidance, how to deal with all that is on point. And I think that's where kind of that. Where striking is amazing, and I think, you know, like, clearly we all train it and we think it's important, but after that first or second strike, where are we?
Mm-hmm. I say,
you might end up on the ground.
This. Or
the greatest boxer of all time, Floyd Mayweather, could easily be defeated by a pretty good high school wrestler.
Yeah, you've said that before.
You know, so if it was just a fight, you say, all right, you two guys are going to fight, start.
Yeah, I don't know.
But if Floyd was getting jumped by a couple people, he got a better chance of fighting multiple people.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if I agree with you on that one.
And then a person that wrestles. You can't wrestling with two people.
No, I agree. I agree with that.
No, definitely that's the thing. But I do. I mean, maybe it's because it's the first thing I thought of, but or the first thing I trained in. I believe having hands and good movement is something that's really important in the beginning.
But I think and correct me if I'm wrong, you're looking at it in its totality of becoming a well-rounded fighter. If you only had to pick one, is it still that one?
Yeah, it would be standing up and fighting. Because I think you've heard me say this before that.
This is the issue I take with it, because you always say jiu-jitsu is fighting on the ground, but it's not always fighting on the ground.
Right. I don't know. Do I always say jiu-jitsu? Well, you said
these guys are fighting off their back.
That was the old school. Like, right. Oh, look at these guys laying down fighting.
And that's what most karate people will still say.
Because they didn't understand it. And that's why I was like, no. Okay. I hear what you goofballs are saying. I want to know what's going on here. I want to see what this. And then I had the wrestling kind of version.
The Emma and the Aya.
There. So.
Okay. What's next?
All right. And we got IVBJJ.
That's Eddie Lin.
Eddie Lin. Working on a new submission, how do you approach adding a new technique to your game?
So, your jiu-jitsu school, which is my jiu-jitsu school, is a laboratory.
There we go.
Right?
Laboratory.
In the laboratory, you're trying... And so the scientific method, when done properly, means that you're trying to disprove that the submission works, right? So and the way you disprove that the submission works is you get it to work on everybody, right? So you try it... But you have to start it off at the lowest of technical ability. So with the people with the least technical ability, right? So you can't come to class and try it on Tim or myself or people that are bigger and stronger than you. You have to try it on the people that aren't very good. And then you move it up to the next. So we go from white belt to blue belt. And then we go from blue belt to purple belt. And then we take it from purple belt to brown belt. And then you're like, all right, I'm hitting it on all the brown belts and it works. Now... I'm going to see if the black belts can show me why it doesn't work. So I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. But more specifically, so like if, let's say you want to work on doing an armbar while you're on somebody's back, try to dedicate some of your training time to starting on the guy's back rather than wasting. Like if you have 5-6 minutes to roll, you don't know how much of that time you're going to burn up trying to get to the person's back. And if they don't want to give you their back, they just might keep their back pinned to the floor. So you might never get to work that technique. So ask your partner or have a partner come in and say, hey, let's work on this. We're going to do rounds. I'm going to start on your back. You're going to start on my back.
So it'll be situational.
So
you're a fan of
that. We can work and then he can dedicate all of his time to getting the arm bar from the back. You know,
I agree with you. And I think even taking it one step further is when you're in the laboratory and you're doing it with white and blue belts that you're much better than, you're telling them, I'm going to start on your back. I'm going to be attacking your left arm. If I'm not on your back or if I'm not on an arm lock, you've won.
Right.
That's right. And if I'm on your back or if I'm attacking the arm lock or finish it, I win. And then we reset from there.
Yeah. That's rock solid advice. I love training with a goal. So if it's like back takes, like watching you do the back take over and over again, I was like, all right, he just wants, trying that. And then as you go up in levels, if it's easier for you to take a white belt back, then, as you move on, kind of push the goal up a little higher.
But the other thing you should be doing, and it's something that I'm doing now, is building your kind of possibilities tree off of that. So saying, okay, this is what occurred, or I did this, this happened next. Okay, now do I ask Tim or Marco or JB, hey, these three things happen, how do I deal with this?
Right.
So there's another aspect of getting better at a certain submission is having very direct questions on the problems that you're encountering.
Here we go. Now we're to our girl.
Our girl.
Thoughts on the American Jiu-Jitsu film on Flow and the ensuing controversy? I didn't see the film yet.
Nor did I. But I think American Jiu-Jitsu is a real thing. And I don't think it's at all disrespectful to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, or Japanese Jiu-Jitsu.
No.
So
it's the next step in the evolution of Jiu-Jitsu.
And there's nothing wrong with us as American instructors and people that are pushing the sport in the United States, taking ownership of it and not changing it, but saying, hey, this is how we see it.
So,
Because Tim and I, we've never learned from Brazilian dudes. We may have taken classes from them, mm-hmm. right? But my instructors were always Americans.
And that the shirt that I brought for you, but I ended up giving to him last week, says Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and then it has Made in the USA on it. But I'm not going to call it American Jiu-Jitsu. It's just like, the other guy, like we talked about this, I think at Open Mat or something. Like they talked to Drysdale and Lovato about this, and they both said the same thing. It's kind of how I feel. It's just Jiu-Jitsu.
Right.
Like, I rarely say I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I say I do Jiu-Jitsu. I teach Jiu-Jitsu. just jujitsu. You don't need to separate it into, because then you're going to have Brazilian, American, African, Russian, Swedish.
You definitely don't want to
go further. Philadelphia.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that if since the Brazilians kind of called it that, or I don't know who coined the phrase, then the next iteration could be someone saying, well, it's American.
But I think it's the
progression.
It's the Brazilians that are getting mad, or the Brazilian nut riders that are unhappy that people are taking ownership of it. Because people don't get mad at Elio Gracie or some people might, but I took their jujitsu and made it my jujitsu.
Right.
I'm taking his jujitsu and making it mine.
The only reason to shoot them some bail would be when you saw it on TV and was mesmerized by it. It had the B on the front.
No, I had the G. Gracie.
Gracie, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's right. It was G'd up.
It was. He was even more
G'd up.
You know,
this guy's even more like, you know, this is mine.
He knows.
So maybe that person deserves for it. Because if you make it the thing where like the whole world got it, you brought it to the world in a sense. At that point, I mean, can somebody, you know, put the little stamp on their joint?
I will never take away. They've inspired me. The Brazilians and the Gracies. All my jiu-jitsu is inspired by them. Right? Without them, we wouldn't be where we're at, or who knows, like where we would be. But I'm not doing the same thing that they're doing in Brazil, and they're not doing the same thing that we're doing here, right? The techniques might be different.
Barrazzo jiu-jitsu.
They're not talking about like rewriting history.
No,
these dudes aren't talking. They're coming up with their. That's like an American ninjutsu. American ninjutsu.
Like American ninja.
That's what I'm saying. So what Michael I'm saying Dudikoff. Is they're not gonna. They're not gonna.
Dudikoff.
Dudikoff.
You know, Michael Dudikoff, the American ninja. Him? Yeah. I guess you don't know. I guess you're not as...
No, I do.
I do remember that, was his that name? Michael Dudikoff.
Yeah.
I thought Michael Dudikoff was a hell of a name, somebody
Dudikoff. That was like just as low budget as Remo Williams.
Yeah, some of them were bad.
Yeah,
that was less of a budget than
Remo. Way ran less on water. Budget.
Remo Williams was a great movie.
I don't know about no, great. No,
but it was I used to love it when I was a kid.
So, you were saying to me...
Oh, wait. She Slay.
She Slay.
He ran on water in that movie.
He did run on water. Yeah, he did. He had like a master. Didn't he carry the master on his back? She was crazy.
Tim and Marco's favorite guard pass in the gi.
Over under. Yeah, for me, it's over under.
Man, I don't know. I don't look at it. I don't know if I have a specific. I really like passing the guard, but they don't. It kind of all blends together for me.
Yeah, so like I really like the leg drag, but I will kill myself trying to find the ways into the over under because it really works for me. So
yeah. That's She Slay. I think that's her favorite guard pass.
Really,
I've trained with She Slay before. She's got a great.
Did she get her kids back yet?
I'm not sure.
You get all
I haven't
your kids
talked
back?
To her. I haven't
Yo,
she's
like, get your shit together, all right?
But I don't want Did you say Brian Pumper?
Huh?
I'm sorry.
Wait, she has kids with Brian Pumper?
What?
She's Brian like, you have Pumper. Kids with Brian Pumper?
He does not even know who Brian Pumper is. Yo, that Marco. Familiar, listen, that this sounds is one thing.
He knows
Marco's
who Brian
entire
Pumper
search
is.
Engine is so black. Marco. Marco's computer does not know that he's white.
All his algorithms, all the algorithms, the AI say, no, that's his.
I will
a black
say,
man living in Philadelphia.
There, I do a version of the body lock pass with a gi using a gi grip.
Okay.
So it's like a one-arm body lock pass with a gi. That's my favorite pass because it's unstoppable, completely unstoppable.
Nice.
So before we wrap it up.
Oh, we got more questions.
Oh, we got, how many more questions? So I'll just let everybody know.
She's nice, so.
After Tim's shitty outro, make sure you keep listening.
Please. That's what it was. That's what you were telling me.
I don't know what I was telling
you. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
This is a pretty easy one. Everyone's favorite old school gi competitor. I know yours.
Who?
Margarita.
Yes.
Hodja Gracie. He's the all time. He's old school, new school. He's the greatest.
I wouldn't necessarily say he's new school.
He smoked.
He's not new school technique.
He smoked. He's the old school gi guy who smoked the newest school world champion.
Buchecha.
Yeah. So. That school never gets old.
True that. JV?
It's just good jiu-jitsu.
Is he talking in the context of jiu-jitsu
competition?
No, he didn't specify. He just said old school gi competitor. So
I was gonna say,
Ron Van Cleef.
Hoist, son. Hoist walking to the fucking Ron, you know what I mean? I'm going
to
that
you were
gonna direction.
Say the Black Dragon, Ron
Van
Cleef.
Nah, son. Nah. Not right.
You know the story of Ron Van Cleef? How
I met him one
UFC,
time.
Right?
Met him one time.
No.
I think you told me this. Was it you that told me the Ron Van Cleef story where he rolled up with some of his students into Art Davies' office?
No,
And he pressed Art Davy to get him into the UFC?
He had that actor, the martial arts actor, Tymock
Johnson.
Tymock, yeah.
Oh, he was in his Bruce corner. Leroy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was in his corner
Bruce
in UFC 4.
Leroy.
Yeah, he's a legend.
More so wait, you want
Bruce Lee?
You want me to do the outro and then we'll stay, or you want to just
no? You do the outro and then I got a couple things I got to do.
Yeah. Any? Huh? They didn't hear the outro.
I can't say it again.
Yes, you can.
No, we got to go.
You got a repiece?
No, all right. But you said it as I was speaking, so I'm sure.
Well, you were interrupting.
Yeah,
my outro.
Clearly.
Yo, have you heard about the interrupting cow?
Because typically Marco's like, and ladies and gentlemen, or something, and then boom, and then you go it.
Haven't heard
Moo.
Of
it.
What? Interrupting cow. Right?
All right, well, that was the outro. The outro is done.
Sneak no, it's in. Not.
What's the?
Pause.
Peace.
So I saw MF Doom back in 2006 in New York, and I was there to take pictures of a friend's band, and it was cool because I got to photograph him doing his sound check, and I knew his manager from way back, and he said, you know, just don't get him without his mask on, which is, I totally respect, but now I see that relating to jiu-jitsu for sure, because, you know, you put the gi on and there's no ego, you put the mask on and he's avoiding his ego, you know, like in a way, or creating a different one, which is pretty interesting. So it's like all you have is your sound, and you know, on the gi, on the mat, all you have is your technique or whatever, you know, you've muscle memorized, you know. So I think that's cool. And also at the time, or even now, you know, hip-hop, it's like now you need a face tattoo or something, you know, to be known, where he was always against that. So he's sort of like an anti-rapper in that sense, and kind of the king of that underground scene back then, which, you know, was huge. And now it's, who knows what underground is with all this internet and all that, with access to everything. So back then he was, you know, paving the way for a whole world of underground rap. And to this day, it's, you still listen to it and it's, hits me. I also have a theory that perhaps when his brother died, when he kind of disappeared to also take care of his son and came back, maybe he wore the mask in respect to his brother dying, and not, you know, if he was going to be famous, it'd have to be both of them. So he didn't want it to be about him, which I think is interesting. It could be a thing.
Hi, my name is Gary Banner, a.k.a. Dr. Banner. What MF Doom meant to me, one of the most prolific rappers of our time, loved the way that he combined jazz, hip-hop, comic book hero style, a.k.a. Doom. Just really, really sad at this point, and it's really horrible to see someone pass that young, and especially when his kid passed at the age of 14 as well. So hopefully they'll be together in heaven now. With that being said, keep grinding.
This is Lorne from Mags FM. I mean, a bit of a tribute to MF Doom. I was familiar with KMD, right? But I wasn't really checking for them like that. It wasn't until I heard Danger Doom with Danger Mouse that I was like, this guy's bringing something very interesting to the game. And I thought it was brilliant enough to make me backtrack and explore his catalogue up until that point, and to ultimately become a fan. You know what I mean? Mad Villain, the Special Herb series, the Gastrols, all that stuff I was really checking for. You know what I mean? And even though I never went to an MF Doom concert, I'm not really a concert person, to be quite honest. I just, anything with MF Doom on it, or MF Doom related, I'll just check for on GP. You know what I mean? I thought the way he put words together was just completely, completely original. You know what I mean? And you know what? He will make references, and like, I'm like saying to myself, how does that guy know about that? How did that guy put that reference and this reference, which are completely unrelated, and make sense? I thought that is just, that's a stroke of genius. Really genius, that. And he was doing it. And this is what I really like about him, actually. He was like 40 and changed when he died, wasn't he? And I heard a MF Doom, I heard a new MF Doom track last week. I played it on the show, actually. It was something that he did with this group. and the quality was still there, the originality was still there. Yeah, MF Doom, man, I salute you big time. You did well.
Ralph Darden, musician, DJ, and composer. MF Doom is my favorite MC of all time, and his passing is extremely, extremely sad, to say the least. It was quite an unwelcome surprise to learn that one of your favorite artists has passed. Growing up, I was a huge fan of comic books, sci-fi films, and fantastic narratives. Also a big fan of hip hop, and seeing someone bring all those things together the way that Doom did, and to do it with such talent and such a blatant disregard for the music industry, or just a blatant disregard for structures of things of how they should be done anyway, from the way that, you know, that his records were produced, that he produced, to the way he wrote rhymes, the way he made stuff. It's just kind of like the essence of everything that I aspire for as a creative person. I was fortunate enough to be able to meet Doom on several occasions. I met him twice as Daniel Dumoulin when he was in Philadelphia, once performing at Fluid, and once when he was in the studio recording the Vaudeville Villain album. Both times, once again, this was just as Dumoulin, as Daniel Dumoulin, not as MF Doom. He didn't have his mask on at the time. He wasn't donning the Dr. Doom inspired persona. He was just a very, very affable, sweet dude, you know, very nice guy. He was there with MF Grimm, Ben Grimm. That was his boy Ben. And it was cool. You could feel this kind of presence. You could kind of sense that there was just something, you know, you know when you come into contact with somebody that has a presence about them. Fast forward years later, I got a job as a music publicist briefly, and was working on, got to work on the Food album. And so I spoke with him several times on the phone. Once again, he was always very affable, very pleasant dude. But a lot of my colleagues at the time could tell you a lot of crazy stories about dealing with Doom as a music industry person. I didn't really belong in that world. And in retrospect, and looking at his whole career, that was another thing that was a big influence on me, was watching someone bring together all of these raw elements of things that I love and see him navigate, you know, kind of basically just DIY, very punk attitude of how he did business and did his thing. It was great. He did not give a shit. As he says on the Vic Vaughn album, V Vaughn, the traveling vaudeville villain, who don't give a flying fuck, who ain't not feeling him. And that was Doom. And I found it very inspiring. So rest in peace to MF Doom. Your influence will live on and continue to inspire me. All right. Peace.
Catch a throat full from the fire vocal with ash and molten glass like I am Jaila Yoko. The volcano out of Iceland, he'll conquer and destroy the rap world like the white man. Learned from a pro as a mentor, started with a bird nest and burnt it to a cinder. Gotta get the party kicking, plus your little charred body smelted like chicken. As the dollar continues to lose momentum, we need land for murdered Indians to represent them. Gold was up, urging all thugs, trading our chains for cash and splurging on drugs. A more secure investment, food and water, a couple of gallons for your cutest daughter. And thank him as a Yankee fellow southerner, don't forget the general rank, hello governor.
Hello governor.
Hello, governor. buckles spill over like the rolling hills of Dover or the Gulf oil disaster preferred you after. Depends on your status or your stature, whether you benefit from the prior or the latter. Get the fatter check split. How much for 100,000 tons of correct shit? Sell a Chinese half-price seafood. Prices like a real nice street dude. Who can knock the most dead birds out the sky and then spread a lie and say you know why? Bet. Get the machine. Blame it on the fireworks. Clean up. Y'all know where to send the wire jerks. Black teeth still snack on sweets and get stacks with the queek mon queek. They used to sell CDs. Now they got fake weed. Seeds burning trees is potpourri. Buyer beware, had to tell us one liar, sire, be fair. At least I'll tie your hair from the chair while I'm here. I hate play loving her, JJ for governor. Hello.